That's all right. You got called out, and now I'm called out. That's all right.
Mark, you're going to have to step up here.
Okay. The mics are live. So, well, good afternoon, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case number 18-155. It is 2:02 in the afternoon, 2:02 p.m. on January 15th, 2019. I am joined by Commissioners Julie Fedorchak and Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Do either of you?
I would like to say that I know this is scheduled till 4. I had something else come up that's very important and is not my thing to schedule, so I didn't have a choice in it. That's at 3:30, so I need to be leaving by about 3:20. And so I don't know if the company's going to take that much time before even advocacy staff will get a chance. Maybe there'd be a natural break point where advocacy could get some of their stuff in too. The second thing I would ask, because of some confusion in previous, I don't remember if they were informals or work sessions or things where we've discussed this case, it seems to me that sometimes we're back and forth and there's confusion in the terminology between the amount of a potential rate hike in an if a case were to come along and whether that is above the current rates that are being paid or above the rates that would be left after the TCJA money is subtracted from those current rates. So I think in all these conversations, we really have to be specific when we talk about those things. So let's throw that out.
Any opening comments?
I do not have opening comments.
Right. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding, but before we do that, we will have staff introduce themselves, followed by representatives of the company.
Thank you, Commissioner. My name is John Shun. Along with me today is Victor Shook.
Jerry Leon with Commission staff.
I know Steve is probably waiting for me to say this, but we have new mics, so you can actually leave them
Great.
Toward the edge of the table, and it should pick up fine.
Ryan Long for Xcel Energy.
Akash Chandrana with Xcel Energy.
All right. Thank you. You can start when you're ready.
Okay, great. Thanks for granting us this opportunity to meet again on this particular matter. From our perspective, we felt like there was a few questions that came out of the last informal, and that was the reason why we asked for this informal. As we kind of dissected it, we thought there was about four, and the four questions were, or are, why are you trying to settle tax reform instead of filing a rate case? What have you been spending your money on since 2013, and how is it driving the need for a rate case?
Just a quick, simple question.
Mm-hmm. This should be no problem. We can bang that one out in about 5 minutes.
5 years.
How can we be sure that customers will be better off with the TCJA settlement rather than a rate case? And lastly, how did you go from an over-earning position in 2017 to needing a rate case today? And I think, Commissioner Christman, your point is well taken, which is as we talk through this, we'll be very careful and very specific about articulating, you know, where, how does this all play in terms of pre-tax reform, post-tax reform, et cetera, so that everybody understands, or we'll do our best to explain really how that all works. And I think last time we were kind of melding things together, which made it really hard to understand which piece goes where. So in light of those four questions, really what I'm going to do is start off by talking about how do we balance our corporate strategy with the fact that regardless of which state we're in, be it South Dakota, North Dakota, or Minnesota, that we have a need for revenue. So throughout the operating company, that's where we are. And then Ryan's going to focus on North Dakota a bit and explain really that question around what have we been doing since 2013, what have we been spending our money on. And then together we're really going to try to focus on how does the settlement lead to just and reasonable rates and how is that better for customers than just filing a rate case. So with me today, Zev's here, Ben Halam is here, he's a numbers guy, and then we got Dave and Mark. We're all here to answer any questions that you guys have, so feel free to stop us at any time and just ask away. We don't have a formal slide presentation. We have slides. We'll hand them out Most of them, we've actually shared a lot of this information with staff. Some of them, there's one slide in here, I think, or maybe two, where it's something that we've pulled together, hopefully that helps explain some of these facts. If there's any questions about it, just we're happy to walk staff through it as well. But I don't think it's going to be anything controversial. So with that, I'm going to start with my first picture, because a picture is worth a thousand words. And if you wouldn't mind. And really what I'll just wait till everybody has one. Just let me orient everyone first. This is not North Dakota specific. This is NSP Minnesota. So this is our entire operating company. And so I just, you know, this isn't specific to North Dakota. Ryan's going to talk a little bit more about the North Dakota stuff in particular. What I want to just focus everyone on is just really three simple things as you look at this. What you see as you get into right about 2015 or so, the black line with the green arrows on it or chevrons on it are sales. And so you're starting to see our sales volume go down over time. The blue line at the bottom is our O&M. So that's just discretionary variable expenses that we spend our money on. And you can see, generally speaking, it's pretty flat during the period of time since we filed our last rate case here in 2013 or 2012 with a 13 test year. And then the red line, which kind of goes up and down, is capital. That's the that's what we spent our money on. We've talked about it a lot in Minnesota as we had a big capital crest that we were hitting or capital summit that we were hitting and that we were going to come down off of it. And Ryan will talk about what drove that. And we've shared a lot of that detail with staff just the other day. And then as you get into 2018, as you go into 19, again, you see another big uptick in capital starting to happen. And so really the big takeaway from all of this is, regardless of which state we sit in, we're entering into a space where we need money. We need revenue. And we're not getting it from sales. And so when you see a picture like that, the first question that usually comes to mind is, well, why are you trying to settle cases or try to settle things and not file rate cases? If you have a revenue need, why don't you go ahead and file for rate cases? And the really simple answer is our corporate priorities right now, two of them in particular are, can we try to keep our total bills flat? And then secondly, can we do things with our customers? Can we work with our customers to make their experience with us better? So last week we had the Google data center announcement that that we had briefly talked about a few months ago. And that is one example of things that we're trying to do with new customers. Likewise, in South Dakota, we're helping customers expand. So we have a big customer, Smithfield. We're helping them do some expansion. And we've done some work in Fargo. And the only reason I bring that up is it's really hard for us to do work like that at the same time that we're filing rate cases. When we focus on rate cases, that's what we do, and that's what we focus on. So the better part of last year and this year, hopefully, we have been trying to settle and avoid filing rate cases. So in South Dakota, in 2017, we earned in the low sevens. That was our ROE, it was in the low sevens. We had to choose between filing a rate case or trying to settle tax reform. And we structured a settlement out in South Dakota very similar to the one that's before you. And that commission accepted that settlement. And we, as a result of that, we were able to avoid filing a rate case and we're able to get our earnings up. And that allows us, again, to focus on some of our other corporate priorities. In Minnesota, we have a multi-year rate plan in effect. We have tried to find ways and we're continuing to find ways to avoid filing a rate case in Minnesota. If we are unsuccessful with that in November, we will file a rate case in Minnesota, and we're in the process of trying to figure out single year versus multi-year. But again, this goes back to this. We have one or two levers to pull here, and it's either going to be file cases or keep working and focusing on other strategic priorities. Likewise,
Josh, yep. Quick question. When you say you want to work with customers, like one of your strategies is working with customers.
Yep.
Are you just saying to increase sales volumes? Is that ultimately how that gets you more revenues, or how does that address your revenue needs?
Yep, some of that is to bring in more sales, and some of it is to avoid losing more sales too. So, you know, for example, we've seen a few customers in Minnesota decide to put large-scale generation behind the meter, and not solar, but CHP, and that brings sales down. And so it's both sides of the coin, Julie. It's like we want to try to help drive sales up, but we also don't want defection either.
And what part of it is trying to avoid this huge spike? Like, is this a mandatory? Do we have to have those capital investments? Or, you know, what part of your equation for avoiding rate cases is on that end of it?
Sure. And Ryan will talk about this a little bit more, but that large spike relates to projects that we've received approval for both in Minnesota and North Dakota. A lot of that is the wind, which also then lowers our customers' fuel clause. And so, you know, again, this gets into that space where we're talking total look, and so you're seeing the capital side of this, and again, this is O&M, but we're not showing the fuel side, which would then show that what we see out in the future is that the fuel cost is going to go down too. So the strategy for us has been total bill impact, not one segment of it. So in regards to North Dakota, you know, we're in the same boat. I mean, it again is the same thing. We have really what feels like the appearance of solid earnings in the last 2 years, but there is a growing revenue need. And, you know, I'm going to hand out another picture which relates to the demand allocator, which we have talked about a bit, and I think we shared this with you guys yesterday. And I'll, I think, do you guys have it there in front of you? Okay. All right.
I'm trying. I have one question. I'm trying
you
to
can
get,
stop me at any time.
Trying to get, and I don't know how to best phrase this, but so you face a unique competitive situation in terms of behind the meter and where that may go in the future, or where you anticipate that could be, or not trying to.
Yeah,
to accelerate that movement or rate of adoption?
Part of it is also energy efficiency. So energy efficiency helps our customers save money, and that's a positive thing. We think that's a really good thing. Conservation it helps offset future generation needs. It's all in all a good thing, but it does put downward pressure on sales volume. We also think that we're going to see some adoption. I don't know how aggressive it's going to be in a climate where there's relatively low gas prices, what the adoption curve looks like behind the meter, but we are going to see people do that. People do want to be able to have choices available to them. And it's not so much the residential customers, it's the larger customers. And when a larger customer decides to take 5% of their sales volume and hedge that against a behind-the-meter generation piece, that has a pretty profound impact on revenue requirements. There's that, you know, if you sell someone 1 million units of something as opposed to 1 million people one unit, that large customer saying, I'm going to shave back 5% of that million, that has a bigger effect. So for us, a big focus right now is how do we keep those larger customers happy? What can we do with them in partnership with them so that instead of them choosing to expand their choice not with us, that they partner with us and in some ways help get those sales numbers to start to flatten out or maybe even go up through economic development.
Okay.
Yeah, just in running a business, it's like, you know, you can put downward pressure on expense, but at some juncture you do have to start to look at how many units of things are you selling and are there ways for us to keep that number from going down.
And the capital investment that's projected in 2019 will help facilitate.
Yeah. It's going to help facilitate some. Yeah, it supports that strategy and helps with that overall bill piece. And that's the benefits we talked about with the three of you in regards to those wind projects. It's that they help to drive down the overall cost for customers. So there's been, you know, we've had a long discussion about the demand allocator, so I'm not going to belabor this point. What I want to point out, though, is this, which is as you look at this graph and you think about the period of time between 2013 and 2018, and we've got 2019 test year on here because, you know, as Ryan will talk about, we've been definitely putting in some work to file a case. What I want to highlight for you is those moments and opportunities where that number goes above that blue dotted line, what we've experienced in terms of our earned ROE in the state of North Dakota has been that we've been below 9%. So that's, you know, a position where that's, you know, not that great for us. In the periods of time where the demand allocator, which has been most recently, where the demand allocator has gone below the blue line, say 2017, for example, we were in the high tens. And so we're seeing some volatility in our projected or our earned ROE based upon what's happening with that demand allocator. And likewise, in 2018, based upon what we know today, we're going to earn around a 10 for our ROE here in the state of North Dakota. And so as we start to think about this, you know, one of the most natural questions that comes up is, well, if you earned a 10.9, for example, in North Dakota, you must have made a lot of money here in the state of North Dakota. Well, in reality, what the demand allocator does is it moves costs around. And because of that in 2017, and because of the fact that we were in a multi-year rate plan in the state of Minnesota where we couldn't change rates, we had a $7 million cost decrease here that shifted $7 million away from North Dakota into Minnesota and South Dakota, and we weren't able to recover those dollars. And that's a penny. That's a penny on an earnings per share basis. So that was a penny that went to our shareholders that was unrecovered. And likewise, we owed a $3 million refund to North Dakota customers here, which we paid. So we didn't make money. And I think there's a perception that when we get a 10.9 ROE that, you know, our shareholders are super happy. Well, when our earnings are being inflated because of a demand allocator, that just means that costs are moving between states is what's happening there.
Can you back up on this one?
Sure thing.
I'm not following this chart. Yep. So the blue line is what?
Blue line is basically it's our three-year trend. So our budget is set on...
Trend on what?
It's our budget is set on a three-year historical average. And so we take that blue line and we create a trend pattern off of that. So that's what we think our budget is going to be for a given year.
Okay.
On the demand allocator. So the years where the actuals are much higher.
And is this just for North Dakota's piece then?
Yep.
Is that what you're, okay.
This is only North Dakota.
And when you say budget, like what you're spending or what your revenues are coming?
It's a projection of where the costs are going to go.
Costs, okay. Yep. Okay, so this is where you think it'll be.
Yep, and so the years where the actuals are much higher than the blue line, that means that there's a lot of costs coming to North Dakota. So in those situations, our revenues are too low. And that's okay. Why our ROEs are really low. In those years where that line is, where that dot is below that blue line, that means costs moved away from North Dakota. It makes it seem like our revenues are too high. And when they match up really well, like say 2016, which is right about there,
mm-hmm.
We earned about a mid-9. For us, what would be perfect is... We get that the actuals in the line match up, and you know, and then the costs are more reflective of what we forecast in a test year. But you can't predict that behavior. And you know, I don't want to take this entire conversation and turn it into a demand allocator. I just want to highlight the fact that there's a lot of discussion, or you know, fits into this puzzle of, well, in 2017 you guys did really well. I don't understand why in 2019 you need to file a rate case.
How often do you calculate the actual percentages you're going to apply for North Dakota?
Well,
is that once a year for the whole year? And do you file that with us
yeah.
and we say okay?
Well, we file it as part of a rate case is what we do.
So it was set at the last rate case.
Our actual earnings are reported every May, and we use actual 12 CP data to calculate those actual results. Those are reported every year in the annual report to the commission.
Rates reflect what was set in a rate case, and then the difference is calculated annually. So
correct.
What actually happens, so rates reflect a forecast,
yep.
And what actually happens is reported to you guys every year. And that's why you're seeing that volatility, and that's why you're seeing volatility in earnings, because the rates reflected what our best guess was based on the outcome of a rate case, and then you see the actuals of what's happening. And as you see here, they're reasonably volatile. There's a projection up and then a projection down. And even though you see them in a what looks like on that chart a reasonably small band, a very, very small 0.1% change in the demand allocator can shift a material amount of costs in between the different states.
And you're not changing your relates to reflect this. You're just
That's correct.
And when it gets too out of whack, then you'd have a rate case.
We would perhaps choose to come in for a rate case to reset the allocator for amongst everything else in our cost of service. The point
you're
I'm trying
to eating this difference?
Correct.
And then this difference gets returned to customers?
No, that difference didn't get returned to customers. But what I'm trying to point out is in
2017 it did.
In 2017 it did. And that there was a $3 million refund. But really what happens in 2017 is I've got $7 million of costs going back somewhere else as well. And if I don't have the opportunity to file a rate case there, which is my own choice, I'm not blaming anybody. It's just that's money that my shareholders pick up. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, money went back to customers here in North Dakota, and my shareholders picked up the rest. And I'm just trying to make sure that we're clear on that, because when somebody sees, hey, you're into 10-9, you guys must have been throwing yourselves a party. No, we're not. And because it's one thing to earn a 10-9 because your revenues are doing, you're selling a lot of units and your expenses are really low, or you drive all the costs out of your business and your revenues are flat. It's another thing when you're earning something just because I moved costs someplace else and I didn't have a way to recover them. So this is a zero-sum game for us.
When you say the costs moved someplace else, are you talking about the solar stuff?
No.
Are we disallowed, or what costs?
No, this is just we allocate costs based upon the size of each footprint.
Right.
And it's the total cost. So it's everything that it takes to run our system.
So you just didn't get that money?
Correct.
Okay.
This isn't related to any mandates. This is our cost of service. And it's just tied to rate case timing, and it's tied to all these different pieces, but I'm just trying to – it was a big point out of the last hearing, which is you guys did really well in 17, and now you're in for – you're thinking about filing a rate case. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
These two graphs, I hope, start to paint the picture of we're managing our business as consistent with very public strategies. Those strategies are, you know, they're well-oriented, they're well-intentioned, but there's a decrease in the number of units we're selling, we're spending more money, and also behind the curtain is the allocation of how those costs are moving around is giving some appearances that sometimes we're really under-earning, sometimes we're really over-earning, but in reality, the best thing to look at is right there. Sales are going down, money's going up, and so we got to find ways to solve that.
Can I ask, go ahead, Randy, and then I'm going to wonder if the, since we're on this and I've got questions about it, I'd be interested in their take on it while we're on this subject.
But Akash, for our record, would you explain the $3 million refund?
Sure. Yeah. So the $3 million refund is very simple. We entered into a settlement with as part of our last rate case, and if we went over the authorized ROE, regardless of what the reason is for that, if we over-earned, we shared a portion of that back with our customers.
But the timing of it being paid out, when was it paid out?
It was paid out in 2018.
Just recently.
November time frame?
Within the last month.
Okay.
So we were going to transition to Ryan now, so.
Oh, cool. Then maybe they can bump in and offer thoughts on this slide.
Yeah, so I think Akash did a really nice job of setting that up. What might help commissioners to in the way of looking at this, if this helps in any way, if you look at that percentage number on the left, you know, so 2013 is when this was set, and I don't know off the top of my head what the exact number was, but let's just say it was set roughly at 6%. What that means is, let's say to run NSP, it takes $100 a year. That's a very simple example. North Dakota's share of that $100 is $6. And the rest of the system, Minnesota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, handles the other 94. Okay? What this is showing is, based on actual usages or demand, the 12 CP demand, the actual usage shifts and changes from year to year. So at the height of it in 2015 there, it grew up to just about 6.4%. Should have been North Dakota's responsibility, but we're only paying that $6. We're not paying $6.40. And then we started to see this downward slide where, you know, 2017 we get down to, you know, probably about 5.8 roughly, and 2018 looks to go a little bit further, similar to that. Am I looking at the right number there?
Yeah, it's kind of goofy. It's like it's just the years are just a little off from the dots, but yeah, you're right.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Just that they're intended to line up with the dots.
Yeah, they're intended to.
Okay.
So North Dakota's share is only, you know, $5.80, but rates are still designed for that $6. And we have best guesses. You know, the company uses some historical averages, and, you know, we would, in a rate case, we would have experts testify to what we think is the appropriate number for the future period, but it's really everyone's best guess of what's going to happen with that in the future.
So I guess where I get confused is why this is a problem for the company, because the formula is designed to get 100%, and so if North Dakota's actually costing $6.20, but we're paying $6, somebody else is paying the difference, and so you're going to get the total revenue.
No, this is, I mean, you, wonderful job of explaining it. The other piece
Victor
that
Victor has explained lots of stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
he knows like it's best to break it down
and
into $100.
And if you can, and if every single year you could file a rate case in every jurisdiction and everybody agreed, then yes, we would be left harmless. The fact of the matter is we don't file rate cases in every jurisdiction. The fact of the matter is not everybody agrees. And at the end of the day, just, you know, for illustrative purposes, this is not an easy thing to forecast as to what's going to happen.
Right. I think we all agree that we don't want a rate case every year, though.
Right. And so,
and I'm sorry to belabor this, but I really want to understand where the shortfall comes, because if North Dakota, the allocator is set.
Yep.
And we're paying, say in 2017, we pay $5.80.
Yep.
No, we pay whatever the allocator is set at, $6.
$6.
But we cost $5.80.
Yep.
So our costs are less, but somebody else is
just
the 6%, the 94 other percent is set in other jurisdictions, so you're getting that revenue.
No, you're not.
Why?
Because it assumes, when you said 580, that assumes that now we've moved to 94.20 elsewhere, and we haven't.
Are we paying 580 or are we paying 6?
You're paying 6. You have
are those
to, you're,
other people paying the same that they said they were?
Whenever we set their rates, that's what they're paying. You know, the nice thing about the example is it's simple. The hard thing about the example is every single year, all the rates don't change either. You're assuming that the rates change every year.
No, I'm assuming they don't. I'm assuming that the allocators are set and they equal 100%. And so sometimes one year, one jurisdiction pays
so
a little less and sometimes a little more.
Let's take your 2017 concept.
Mm-hmm.
And we set, it's still set at 6 for North Dakota. And say for everybody else, it's set at 92 because of all the different rate case outcomes.
So you're saying the rate cases are off in any given year, so you don't have 100% allocator?
Correct.
Always. They never add up to 100%?
That happens all the time. I haven't filed a rate case in South Dakota in quite a few years.
The issue to really keep in mind is in Vic's example. Minnesota rates are set at 94. North Dakota rates are set at 6. When North Dakota
use the microphone just so we get it on recording, please?
If Minnesota rates are set at 94 and North Dakota rates are set at 6, when North Dakota's costs are 580, Minnesota's costs on our books from an accounting perspective become 94.20. And because Minnesota's rates are set at 94, we lose the 20 cents in Minnesota that got shifted from North Dakota to Minnesota. And the same thing happens if you don't file a rate case, because you're not updating rates to reflect the actual costs. And so when the cost shift from one state to the other and you don't have a rate case in that other state, you have the loss.
I got it.
Yep.
Okay.
There's, you know, the assumption is that we file a rate case in NSP, Wisconsin, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, all at the same time.
I got it.
And that the takeaway from that is 100% is all allocated appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
That's one is we don't typically file cases in every footprint all at the same time. That's the first problem there.
Got it. Thank you.
Are you done? All right. So with that background, I'm going to turn a little bit more to North Dakota. As Akash mentioned, we have been preparing our case, and we've gotten our arms around our revenue deficiency that we're projecting and the drivers of that. So I just want to provide a little bit more information on that for the commission. That's kind of the other main thing we heard from the last working sessions and informals was that the commission wanted to understand better what's driving our deficiency in 2019. So this is the test year that we've put together. And I think this also addresses Commissioner Chrisman's question at the start of this hearing, which is where do the TCJA savings get reflected here? And they get reflected as a reduction to our total revenue deficiency. So we start with a total revenue deficiency of $33.9 million. That kind of reflects what would have been the outcome had there never been tax reform. There was tax reform, so we have a reduced expense associated with the TCJA, so that reduces our deficiency by $11.3 million, and you get a deficiency net of tax reform of $22.6 million. Then what we do is we back out the Ryder Rollins, and we get $15.3 million. That $15 million actually reflects the increase to rates that we're projecting in our test year because the Ryder Rollins are a net neutral addition and subtraction. So that's the deficiency that we're looking at. It's based on a 10.35 ROE, but if you reduce that to 9.85, which is what's in the settlement agreement, it brings it down to about $13 million, a little over $13 million. So that is, at a high level, the calculation that we're looking at. What I want to do next is kind of turn to what's driving that. It's really a lot of capital projects. The last time we were in for a rate case was a 2013 test year, and so we've brought a lot of data with us that's hopefully summarized in a helpful way to kind of look at the capital projects we've done since that time, and then we'll look at kind of how those capital projects feed into a revenue requirement. So I've got a couple more handouts.
Just to be clear here, Ryan.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty obvious, but I just want to make sure I'm clear in my mind. Had the Tax Cut and Jobs Act not passed, we would be looking at a deficiency net of roll-ins of $26.6 million.
That's correct. Can you pass those up there? Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to go through this entire
spreadsheet. Yeah, 64 pages. But when we look at our net deficiency of $15.3 million, we see a lot of capital additions because of the amount of time since our last rate case. And so what we tried to do here is this is a packet of information. There's a staple document that's 64 pages long. It lists each individual project capital addition we've undertaken since 2014, the amount of that addition and rolled up into grand totals. We've tried to make it a little more digestible with the first page, which summarizes into categories kind of our largest projects. And there's a grand total to the right. And so if you start at the top, these are the largest projects. And as you look down that list, what you see is in the top 10, 11 projects, five or six of them are nuclear related. So we have nuclear fuel, Prairie Island reliability, Prairie Island life cycle management, Monticello reliability. And these investments reflect kind of what we talked about briefly, I think, at the last informal, which is at the time of our last rate case in North Dakota, we had just gotten through relicensing both of our nuclear units to run through 2030, 2033, and 2034. To make it to those long dates, we had to invest a lot of capital into the plants to make them reliable, to keep them safe. And so you see that reflected in each of these years and the several hundred millions of dollars that we've invested in the plants. And when you think about kind of what are customers getting for those dollars that we're putting in the plants, with respect to our nuclear fleet, a lot. We have achieved capacity factors in the last couple of years pushing 99%. Our production costs are lower than they've been since 2013. We are in the all the right NRC safety columns, by kind of all of the metrics that we look at over time, the nuclear fleet's running really, really well. And we think that's in large part a result of the investments we've made to get to the end of life. And we think that we're coming off of some of those investments. We're still looking to make some, obviously, in 2019, and you can see some of that reflected here. And then moving away from the nuclear-related investments, you see things like the Black Dog Unit 6, for which we have an advanced determination of prudence granted from the commission. You see CapEx 2020, and at the top there you see our wind, which Akash has talked a little bit about. So that's a quick summary of all of the capital projects. I won't go through the 64 pages. There are a lot of projects listed here. But what I'd like to do, I think, is kind of turn to how we're calculating our revenue deficiency and talk a little bit more about what's driving it with this in the background and kind of the capital projects behind it.
I haven't gone all the way down the list, but is the Big Stone south to Ellendale? Where does that fit into this? Is that part of the North Dakota transmission grid?
It's a transmission.
Or distribution?
No, it's a transmission project. We built that with Otter Tail, and it extends the Ellendale line into South Dakota and connects it to the Brookings line.
Right, but is that where it's at, under the transmission
grid? That's in the transmission. It's just in our general. I think it's packaged up as transmission, either Minnesota grid or North Dakota grid.
There's a Big Stone to Brookings. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's outside of our...
Are you talking about the CapEx? It's probably
the North Dakota transmission grid. The transmission projects are rolled up into a bigger package, so it's North Dakota, and Minnesota is also in there. Yes.
That's in the CapEx.
That's in the CapEx. It's in the CapEx line.
Oh, there we go.
Right at the top.
You got to have that? With you? Okay, good deal.
Big Stone South Allendale is in the CapEx 2020 line?
We didn't build Big Stone to Ellendale. We built Big Stone to Brookings.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. I've got MDU and
that's right. Otter Tail built that one.
Never mind. Okay. Well, that would make sense.
That's why it's not there.
It's good.
It's a good thing it's not there.
That's the bottom of that one.
Just checking, because we would have been really mad if we'd have found that in.
Wait a second.
Well, congratulations on passing the first test of the afternoon. So.
All right. So what I passed out here is kind of the key to looking at how we calculate our revenue requirement. We're moving from very big numbers, hundreds of millions of dollars for the capital additions from the 64-line spreadsheet and the summary, to small numbers because this actually shows the revenue requirement impact of all of those projects. So this is a walk-up from our 2013 cost of service, the last time we filed a case, and shows kind of all of the capital additions and drivers that is driving us toward a net deficiency of just over $15 million. So what you see in the capital additions line is $40 million of capital additions, and that is all reflected in what we just looked at, all the capital projects in the 64 lines. And as you start to break that down, we've kind of tried to break out what's really driving that $40 million. And as you go down that list, you see a number of things that we've broken out. You know, the Prairie Island generator replacement at Unit 2, we got an advanced determination of prudence for that. Black Dog, I've mentioned, we got an advanced determination of prudence for that. Pleasant Valley. Black Dog Unit 6 is the gas plant, yeah. Pleasant Valley Wind, through our negotiated agreement, we got agreement on cost recovery, tantamount to an advanced determination of prudence there. The commission just granted us an advanced determination of prudence for the 1850 wind. And then as you keep going down that line, you look at the transmission interchange. That's coming from Wisconsin through the federal interchange agreement. And so those costs are federally preempted. The distribution are all North Dakota-specific distribution projects. So, you know, just at a higher level, I think the point we're trying to show with this and with the list of capital additions is that when you look at what's driving our deficiency, it's all of the normal investments in our plant that you would expect to see, given that we haven't been in for a rate case in almost 5 years. They're kind of run-of-the-mill investments in reliability and keeping our nuclear plants running. And all of the, as Zev says, the pumps and the wires and all of the things that requires to run a utility are really what's behind those $40 million of capital additions. And if you just keep moving down the sheet here and you look at other things outside of capital, you see that taxes are obviously a big driver. We've got the TCJA impact reflected there. But then property taxes have gone up since 2013, and so that offsets part of it. And O&M is relatively flat since 2013. We've seen very little O&M growth since 2013, less than inflation, and so that's certainly not a driver. And then there's a revenue line, and I just want to make clear, or a line that reflects $17 million. That reflects rate increases that were agreed to in 14 and 15. So we're accounting for that in the deficiency. We're showing those as additional revenue coming in the door. And then when you back out the riders and look at the net deficiency, you get to about $15.3 million. And, you know, that reflects the case that we would file. And I think staff's memo in support of the settlement did a good job analyzing what a reasonable outcome from a rate case would be. I think they said conservatively assume 50% of the company's ask. I think that's a fine bogey for this purpose. And so that gets you down to, say, $7.5 million of revenue deficiency. That suggests to me that the settlement reflects an outcome that is $6 or $7 million better for customers than a rate case outcome, even after you look through our case and handicap it and say, just give it a 50% haircut, assume the company's not going to get 100% of what it asks. What that outcome looks like, rates going up by the tune of $7.5 million, whereas the settlement outcome reflects rates going up by base rates not moving at all, and rates in the for the wind going through the rider, which is part of the agreement, going up by about $1 million in 2019. And so that's how I get to the settlement being, you know, $6 or $7 million better than kind of staff's best cut at a rate case outcome at a high level. Any questions about any of that?
I have two questions.
Sure.
First of all, way back up on production. What's that? 10.1.
Production is, and I'll look to Ben to make sure I'm right here, but production is kind of the normal investments in our plants, you know, things that we didn't call out, you know, other Prairie Island reliability investments. If you go back to look at those capital additions, we had a line for Sherco, we had a line for Prairie Island reliability, we had a line for Prairie Island life cycle management, those kinds of investments in our plant. We called out a couple specific ones, mostly because we had ADPs for those, so we thought it was important to at least make the commission aware that that was part of it. Okay. And those are all netted out, so those aren't reflected in the 10. Those are in addition to the $10 million in kind of normal plant investments we've made.
And then on the 1850 wind less Foxtail with 3.8, and then you recognize the rider revenue coming in at 0.8. I would kind of expect those to be similar. Why are they not?
The rider roll-in reflects the fact that we are recovering for two wind projects right now in the RER, those being Borders and Pleasant Valley and Courtney, sorry. Those would get rolled into base rates if we filed, and so what we do is we back those out because it's rate neutral, basically. You roll them into base rates and you pull them out of the rider, and so at the end of the day, customers aren't paying any more or any less.
There's a separate line.
Yeah. So if you go back up to the RER roll-in.
Yep.
So we're, in theory,
oh, sure,
they're capturing the same,
yep,
thing.
That's right. And the only difference there, it's 0.7 and 0.8 below. The difference there is some tax.
But isn't the plan to pay for those wind through the rider, so
if,
would that be addressed down there?
If the commission approves the settlement contemplates recovery of the new wind projects in the RER, but absent the settlement agreement, which is kind of how we put this together,
yep,
the RER only allows for recovery of projects actually located in the state of North Dakota.
Okay. Got it.
Any other questions about the revenue calculation?
Why, if it's a $7 million difference for the company, why would you think that's, why do you want to do that? I mean, that's the part of me that seems like, why are they interested in this deal?
And it goes back to exactly what I started the discussion with, which is right now for us, we think that it's actually more beneficial for us not to file rate cases than it is for us to file rate cases. And, you know, I think one of the things that we probably don't do the best job of explaining, but I'll try my best to do so, is, you know, when we file rate cases, the next question that gets asked of our other most important stakeholders, by our other most important stakeholders, our investors, is, hey, how's that rate case coming? And it doesn't matter what footprint you're in. So I have sat in on investor meetings where I will hear a tremendous amount of questions about, hey, how's that New Mexico rate case going? How's that Texas rate case going? They do not focus then on the other initiatives that you have going on. And so right now it's, you know, you're thinking about it in terms of, hey, why don't you want to file that North Dakota rate case? Well, right now at the same time as we're thinking about, you know, should we file a North Dakota case or not, we're thinking about several rate cases that might have to be filed in Colorado, several rate cases that might have to be filed in SPS. We've got some other things that are cooking along in the Wisconsin company. And so as a whole, we're trying to balance a portfolio of all of the operating companies as we think through this. And from our perspective, it's a lot better to be talking to our customers and our investors about things that are positive, such as economic development, than it is to be sitting there talking about how we're going to continue to increase rates. And so that's it's a corporate strategy that we have, and we're really trying to make sure that we cue our rate cases in the right order. So it may seem like, well, why do you want to do that? Because what are you trying to get away with? And instead it's, no, we're trying to manage XL Energy, not North Dakota. We're trying to fit this into a broader portfolio. And sometimes that gets lost. But our investors, and that's no different for any other utility, maybe perhaps right now PG&E, but, you know, every utility, when they file a rate case, the first question that gets asked by investors is, how's that going? How do you think that's going to play out? What do you expect to get out of that? When do you think you're going to get an answer? Pretty straightforward.
I'm going to ask the same question, only probably in a confusing way.
Okay.
So hang on. But just looking at North Dakota as a small portion of your overall business model, 6%, we'll say. And if I look at, okay, just on that 6% of your customer base, your business, you're going to be $7-8 million short. Is this a phenomena that's occurring everywhere that you operate, or is this unique to North Dakota?
And I think I'm understanding your question right, which is,
well, if I were to amplify that $7 million,
yeah, across
by
the
multiple,
right,
of,
yeah, 8 states,
16, yeah, 17, to hit all the your entire footprint, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
So I'm asking the exact same question.
Yeah, you are asking the same exact question. And really what to put a finer point on it, right now our focus is actually on a few other operating companies as part of the XL family. So there's some pretty big decisions that have to be made out in Colorado in terms of rates. And we've had some challenges down in SPS. And so that's a bigger area of focus. And likewise, we're exploring opportunities in other of our operating companies to get more longer-term rate compacts in place. We think it's actually better for us to try to find more stability in rates and manage our costs than it is for us to keep coming in and filing rate cases. So do I have $7 million or that equivalent of earnings gaps in every one of my footprints? No, I don't. And if I did, we wouldn't have the financial health to support where our stock price is today. So, you know, we talk a lot about how to do this right. And granted, it's more art than it is science, but, you know, we don't want to have $7 million holes everywhere, because our investors will go find money. They'll put their money someplace else, but they do trust us because we've done well by figuring out where to go and how to manage our business once we have those outcomes. Okay. The last thing, and this is going to kind of get at the same point that Ryan's making, I'm just going to do it from a different perspective, which is, the natural question becomes, and this fits into the wait a second, you guys are going to be $7 million light. What's going to happen here? And so what we tried to do is handicap the settlement. What is it? What do we think is going to come of this because of the settlement? And this is our this is a rough shot at it. So, you know, as we think about, you know, a formal hearing down the road, this can be something that we can flesh out more and share with staff, go through the back work papers with, do all that work so that we're all on the same page. But we thought that we would take literally a few minutes to try to say, okay, if you look at the deficiency that we have, what do we project our return on equity to be? Well, it's going to be 5%, which is not good. And so as we then climb back from that, where do we think we're going to end up? And this gets to both of your questions about the $7 million. Well, wait a second. You guys are going to leave $7 million on the table. What gives? And so, you know, we got the settlement contemplates that we keep the tax reform, and that's worth about 2.6% on an ROE basis. We are showing the what happens by getting that wind in the rider. It's worth about 20 basis points or so. And then we did some forecasting on that demand allocator piece that we started our conversation with. And so if you want to get that graph back out, you can see that 17 was a year, as Vic explained, where, North Dakota was paying the $5.80 as opposed to the $6. And that was a situation where we over-earned dramatically in the state. And so we said, well, what if we set our current budget, 2019 budgeted demand allocator, to that 2017 level? It's worth about 1.5% in ROE. And where does that take us? 9.4. And the settlement sets us at 9.85. And so we're under, but we're, you know, that's not a bad number. That's a good place to be. And likewise, if for whatever reason that 12CP, that demand allocator, just sits at the budgeted level that we think that it's going to be at, we're down to about an 8. And so one of the big questions is, like, is the company, you know, is the company shifting some risk away from itself onto customers? Are the customers going to be disenfranchised with the settlement agreement? Because that's a pretty big question. And one of the things that, you know, advocacy staff did a really good job with in negotiating this thing was they lower the ROE, they put an earnings share mechanism on it, and then if anything goes over that 985, 100% gets refunded back to customers. So when you look at this, that demand allocator bouncing around, that risk stays with the company. And we don't know what it's going to do, but we wanted to show what we think the value of the settlement is. We think it could be worth somewhere in the ballpark of a 9% ROE. And for us in North Dakota, with everything else we have going on and the other things we want to do, that's a good enough outcome for us. So that's the reason why we are pushing the settlement. That's the reason we're aggressively advocating for it. We negotiated it. We think that we got a good deal for ourselves. We think that customers are going to get a good deal with this too. And to the extent that we're wildly wrong on any of this, customers are protected. And that's kind of the story here.
Victor, Jack?
I think Akash kind of nailed it there. That's kind of our same feeling. I think the settlement represents fair for both customers and the company, but we do have that protection in place in case we are really wrong in either direction. Customers will not lose. You know, we have if the allocator changes where it. I got myself turned around in knots in my head, but let's say the allocator continues this downward trend and it goes even less. In that case, the company would potentially over-earn. We have the protection in place where, not like in the past, and in other settlement agreements, the companies had to give back a portion of the over-earnings. They have to give back 100% of earnings over an ROE level that we haven't set since I'm not sure when, I guess. Yeah. It's much lower than what the company has traditionally had. So we have that protection in place if it goes down. If the allocator goes back up and beyond where the company is expecting, they will earn a far lower ROE. So really the risk here on 19 and 20 is with the company.
And what are the drivers of that allocation factor? Is it largely weather?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. We were talking about it over lunch, actually, which is like in 2017, what ended up driving the allocator down is the fact that when we had peak in the summertime, so all the systems had their peak day, which was in June, on the June peak day, it was cold in Minot. It was colder in Minot than it was in Minnesota and South Dakota. So it was 90 degrees in Minnesota and 90 degrees in South Dakota, and it was 70 degrees in Minot. So folks didn't run their air conditioner as much, and so because of that, and that happened a few other times, that shifted the demand allocator. Mm-hmm. And Zev's right. I mean, you know, if you look at the bandwidth on the percentages, you're not talking wild moves. You're talking like a tenth of a percentage point. But that tenth of a percentage point can drive millions of dollars between states. And so $7 million in North Dakota has a huge impact on the ROE. $7 million moved back into Minnesota has very little to no impact on ROE. And that's why these things have really exaggerated impacts here and don't have the same impacts over there. And, you know, I won't hide from this at all. You know, for us to be able to say we've got South Dakota and North Dakota solved and put on a path where we don't have to worry about filing a rate case for a few years, so we as a team can go focus on how to solve Minnesota and whether or not we have to go file a Minnesota electric and gas case or Minnesota electric case or a multi-year or a single year, that's very important to the company as a whole, because that's going to take up a lot of resources to go figure that out. So it seems at times like, there's got to be more here than what's there, but it really is. We're thinking through this in terms of where do we want to go allocate our resources, how do we want to do that, and what's going to drive the biggest value back for Xcel Energy. And that's what we're thinking through.
Talk at all, Ryan, about the distribution investments, anything more on that?
Yeah,
what might be related to some of that reliability stuff?
Yeah, I think Dave is probably the expert on that.
Well, the expert's gone a little far. I did jot down a few things. The commission is well aware of the investments that we've been making in...
State your name.
Dave Cedarquist, Regulatory Affairs Manager in North Dakota.
Thank you.
As I was saying, the Commission's well aware of the efforts we've made in the last 5 years to address some reliability issues in North Dakota. We have removed a lot of underground cable. We have installed some automated distribution, the IntelliTeam switches that we've talked about. That's been a big driver. We've been replacing some cross arms with fiberglass, some older wooden ones with fiberglass. But there have been some bigger items as well. We had I'm looking to see here, I'll maybe go by memory, but we had an extension to our Simplot, one of our largest customers, to Simplot. That was about a $3 million project, an underground cable. We actually replaced some line there for them. We had a $6 million substation. It was actually, I think it was upgrading a transformer at our Nordic sub in Grand Forks, a $6 million project in 2018. And then the last thing was to upgrade the capacity of a transformer in our Minot Sura sub, and that was a $3 million. And that was a 2018 expenditure as well. So even just since 2017, there's been some significant investments made just in the North Dakota distribution system.
Didn't you build a new substation in Minot? Is that?
Yeah, and that's more of a transmission categorized expenditure, but that did spawn some extra distribution expenditures as well. So we had to do some distribution work around that. But that was a $50 million transmission project, the one that you're referring to. Yeah, actually, the work at the, just following my notes here, at Nordic, we actually added a third transformer at that sub, and these are huge, these transformers, and that was the $5 million project, so.
How do those local distribution or in-state distribution projects get allocated?
Those are direct assigned to the state that the equipment is located in.
Okay, so the ones here where it says South Dakota. Well, I just see transmission grid upgates. That would be theirs.
I think Benj took out all of the direct assigned non-North Dakota distribution projects from that list. So
these are, that's a transmission that would be for the system as a whole.
And just to be clear, too, we've had some discussion about the 12 CP. It's the production and transmission assets that are system-wide. That's what that allocator pretty much applies to.
Okay.
Just about everything else is either direct assigned or it's allocated based on some other meaningful allocator. But the 12 CP is pretty much production and transmission.
Victor, can you think of a compelling reason why this would not be good for North Dakota ratepayers?
I guess I don't think we would have signed it if we would have think of too many of those.
Right.
So, I mean, generally, I think it's positive. You know, just to kind of recap, but I think today we kind of spent some time in the weeds a little bit, just to kind of recap what the settlement is. We're giving back 9.7, you know, just shy of $10 million with carrying costs to North Dakota ratepayers for 2018. We're not going to have the over-earnings protection on there because we're making them give back $10 million. 2019 and 20, they'll be allowed, would be allowed, to collect non-North Dakota-based wind resources in the renewable rider. And then we have that over-earnings protection at the 985 ROE for those 2 years.
And just to follow up on that, I know there's been a lot of discussion about the scrutiny that this has been given. We listened to the last special meeting, or the last, I think, work session on this, and this has been a long road to even get to this point, and by no means have we had any interest in avoiding a rate case. I think, just to speak informally, I'm sure Vic could tell you many stories. I mean, just walking by, like, let's just wrap it up, tell the commission we want a rate case over and over and over again. So we did have a lot of, we provided a lot of scrutiny in this case. And we started off all the way back in 2017, December 29th, when we actually did our initial filing. All the companies provided testimony to us or some sort of initial comments to us. I think I provided the initial memorandum from staff. It was about 20 pages on all the companies and providing the path forward in March. And I think in our discussions, I stated that, well, we probably won't really get to dig into this till probably July due to our rate cases that were open at that time. But we were looking at it throughout that time. Starting July, we started digging in to all of the companies. I mean, fairly extensively and having a lot of discussions. And true to what the memo said that we filed in March, we said we'd have something filed probably by September or set it for a rate case. It wasn't enough by the end of October or September. It was October 1st, so we were a day off. But but we did have something
Jack.
Filed.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't meet the expectations. But there was a lot of interaction with the company. There was a lot of data requests back and forth. And even up until probably about 2 weeks before that, I still was completely convinced that we should just have a rate case. But We sat down and had a number of discussions. Like I said, we provided a lot of scrutiny into the companies and whatever they filed with us as well. And I guess to just follow up with, this isn't a rate case scrutiny. But I will say also, if you take a look at what, when we do get a consultant on board, at least in the time that I've been here, there hasn't been something that has been a really large disallowance that the staff has not already caught before even the consultant got on board. I'm not saying that that can't happen, but I'm just saying that that hasn't been my experience with this. And so we could go through and we could get some consultants on board. We could have a rate case, and I think staff is completely comfortable with that idea as well. But ultimately, I think that this, not just I think, we have quite a bit of confidence that this is going to be the best outcome for our North Dakota customers. And maybe that's not what the commission feels is just and reasonable rates, but, and we're willing to explore that as well. But we do think that this is, for the customers, what we would like to see. The other thing I'd just like to touch base real quickly on, I know Victor and I had this discussion, is the formal hearing that's coming up. We can go ahead and have that formal hearing. I'm not exactly sure what the commission is going to get out of that any more than what they've already been provided. We've had two informal hearings on this. And in both informal hearings, we have provided quite a bit of data, quite a bit of documentation. If there's anything else that the commission needs, we would be happy, as well as I'm sure the company would be happy, to provide that same information to corroborate the settlement or whatever the commissioner's thoughts or concerns are. So if we do want to go forward and have the formal hearing, I just don't feel that that's going to be a necessary next step procedurally. I think probably at this point in time, the commission should have a fairly good idea what they would like to do, whether it's approve the settlement or set it for a rate case or request some sort of modification and see if the company is still comfortable with that. So with that, of course, we will submit ourselves to whatever the commission prefers is the best path forward. However, those are just our Victor's and I's and advocacy staff's and maybe an advisory staff's general feelings on the matter.
Jerry, you've been quiet. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I never thought that the settlement was a bad deal. I liked the protections that were in it on the over-earnings, that if it does go wrong, the consumer doesn't get hurt. On the other side of it, if the commissioners want to see all of the numbers and go through and do the whole case, then the settlement doesn't do that, of course. But I guess I didn't have a problem with accepting the settlement.
A question for Jerry. This question is related to rate shock impacts and just kind of what you would foresee happening if this settlement were not entered into. Here's how I would imagine it, and you tell me if I'm wrong. It would clearly they have other things to do and are hoping to avoid one, so I assume they have not got a rate case all bound up out in the car ready to bring up here. And so it's going to take them some time to put that together. Then it takes us time. And so most of these rate cases, while they're supposed to take 9 months, are taking more than a year. So we're a ways out. Would you imagine a scenario where then for 2019 the rates would be lowered to reflect the TCGA savings? So we are at one point now, they would be lowered then for much or all of 2019, and then kind of based on these numbers we're seeing, expect them to go up, back up to even higher than what they are now after the rate case is completed?
Well, you really don't know how long it'll take them to get a rate case in here, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see it pretty soon. And if that's the case, then the interim rates would go into effect by spring. And I think the interim rates will be higher than what we're looking at doing with the settlement. So I think there
probably never would be the reduction to make up for 2000 for TCGA and then back up. It would just jump.
You might give them a little bit back and then turn around and get an increase.
Well, is this correct? It would actually jump by significantly more than the TCGA savings because of the formula that would be applied to the revenue deficiency that is being stated?
I think so. I think the interim rates would be higher than the rates going forward under the settlement.
It's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, Commissioner Christman, I can tell you that one of the things that you're probably sensing a little bit, like we brought a lot of information to the table today, and you see a lot of us in the room today. This is a very important hearing for us, because if we don't walk out of here feeling good about where the settlement sits, there will be a rate case filed quickly. And by quickly, I mean, we are very close to having that buttoned up, and it's not in the car, but it could be pretty close to being put in the car and driven up here. So, and it goes to just the deficiency slide that Ryan shared with you. There's a lot of, it goes from us being willing to say, okay, let's go focus our efforts somewhere else, to, no, we got to focus our efforts here. There's too much money left on the table here. And so, that's just the state of it. And so I tend to agree with advocacy staff on this one, which is, it'd be great if we had a sense of whether we're going to formal hearing or not. We don't mind coming back for a formal hearing. We can do whatever it takes. But for us, the big piece is we really are looking for some confirmation today that, yes, these are the pieces of information that I needed to feel good about those questions that I led off with. I understand what you're doing. I understand what's going on. And, yeah, I got it. And to the extent that there's still pieces of information missing, or there's just I can't get there. It'd be better for us to know so that we can, go focus our efforts on bringing a case forward instead. We have a good reason as to why we did this. We worked really hard with advocacy staff. We feel like we've done the right thing in terms of the protections for the customers. And, we kind of need to figure out which path we're going to take here. So that's the reason why you're seeing a pretty, pretty intensive effort right now.
Akash, on the first, I think this was the first slide or maybe the second one, this yep. Baby.
Is that the 12 CP?
Yeah. No, the metrics, the...
It's the kind O&M of the sales.
And capital costs. Okay. Where do you see that line, the red line, going beyond 2019? Is it still heading straight up, or are we going to see it kind of the lumpy go down again like we saw in 2015-16?
It's not going to go down in 2020 and beyond, but it's also not going to be at that same steep trajectory from 2018 up. But as we just even take the wind ADPs that we brought forward and got approved, the in-service dates of those wind projects were staggered between 19 and 20, and that was to capture the 100% PTC. So there's going to be wind capital investments in the 2020s. And so we're going to continue to see some climbing that's going to happen. And so for those next 2 years, we have capital growth, and there's always stuff to be done on the distribution side. We're always striving to make sure that we have really good reliability scores. And, again, I kind of brought it up in an offhand comment about, PG&E, but the industry is very aware right now of what happens when you're struggling with making those necessary investments into your distribution system and you create reliability issues. You don't want to be in that space. Mm-hmm. So for us, we are constantly evaluating, and in fact, we'll go through our budget setting process here in the spring, but we're looking always at what do we need to go spend money on. Another big thing that we have not spent a lot of money on for over about 20 years is our back office. So one of the things that's on this walk down is the General Ledger WAM project. Those are back office systems that fully depreciated. We finally undertook the effort to replace our General Ledger system. So unfortunately, there's always a need to spend capital in a business like ours, and it's a matter of figuring out how much of it you can spend when. And so it's not going to rock, you know, it's not going to fall out below us, but we also have to be cognizant and sensitive to the fact that you stay on curves like that, and that's also not great for customers either.
So you mentioned 2019, 2020, maybe 2021. Are you thinking tapering? I mean, do we see this? Do you foresee this at any point in the 2020s? Dropping out?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to. We can't go on a curve where, you know, your revenues are going down and your capital is going up and you're trying to suppress your O&M, because suppressing your variable expenses is also, you can only do so much of that. For example, our vegetation management programs and our variable O&M. And so you can only do that for so long. But we are right now in an uptick, and a lot of that is driven by investments that we're making that we think on a total bill basis are going to help to drive down costs.
Could I interrupt a second? Because I have my other commitment, and it doesn't mean that I don't take this seriously. I fully intend to review the rest of this. Right now, I don't have any questions lingering. When I review it, maybe I will, and I'll be in touch with Jerry. I will just say right now, hats off to our staff, in my opinion. I think they've done a nice job here. It's not a secret that I'm not happy about some of the expenditures that bring us to this point, but now we are at this point. And right now, unless something more comes up during the rest of the informal here that I'll review later, right now I would not have a need for the formal. And I think this is a well-done settlement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, if I may, just before you leave it, is there anything that any of the commissioners feel that they would need that would be helpful in making a decision based upon this informal that we can provide after this hearing? I know you said right now you're fairly comfortable, but
I do not have a request at this time. Okay. But if in the discussion something pops up, may later. I'm not casting a final vote, but kind of know, I think, my opinion as of now.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, if I may, I just want to point out something else on that chart you were asking about, because this is something the commission has never seen before. And in fact, I don't even know if our company has seen it in North Dakota. The sales line that's showing a decrease year after year from 2014 on. The last time we were in here filing a rate case, we were showing sales increases each year. And so that's something new that we're kind of dealing with, I guess, but it's also a factor, too, as we look forward and going, you know, what is that line going to look like? But I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of that situation on the sales side.
I can't help but ask them, how much money do you spend every year on conservation?
Not a lot in North Dakota, to be honest.
System-wide, these are sales. And then, how much lost revenue do you get from spending that money? From your decreased sales, it just seems like it's not good.
It's a complicated question because you've got different rate, recovery mechanisms in different states. So, for example, you've got a decoupling mechanism in Minnesota. So, off the record, we can get into a very lively discussion about our different personal beliefs on those different aspects, but. From running a business perspective, that's where we sit. And so, again, it goes back to this concept of, are we going to be on a straight line trajectory of constant spending? Well, if we do that and our revenues are going in a different direction, it's going to be really hard to then go back to our customers and say, hey, I understand and appreciate that you're paying some of the highest rates in the upper Midwest or in the country. But stick with me. It's worth it. So, these are...
They don't have any choice.
No, and that's why I went back to what I said at the very beginning. our largest customers are pretty intelligent, and they have money, and they are figuring out ways to say, you know what, yeah, I have to take wire service from you, but I can self-generate. Mm-hmm. So
they have more tools now than
they
ever
do.
Before.
And they have more information now than before, mm-hmm. more than so than ever, but.
And Zeb, just in case, are you going to say something?
Yeah.
Could you also? I don't know if I caught this earlier, but could you just state your name for
Zeb Simser on behalf of Xcel Energy. Commissioner Fedorchuk, you asked about the uptick, and I just heard Akash sort of talk about it as an uptick, and I want to be clear to give you some context on those capital numbers a little bit. That high point in 19 represents about $1.75 billion in capital additions for 2019. That's the forecast. But of that, $1.25 billion is related to the wind. And so that means the remainder is about $500 million in capital additions. If you compare that to 18 and to 17, those are in the $700 to $800 million range in those two particular years. And so what happens is you make a big investment like wind, it crowds out other investment. So you'll see these upticks, but you'll also see it come down or level out. It's not to say you spend $1.75 billion in 1 year, and then the next year you spend $2 billion, and the next year you spend $3 billion, unless there are some major initiatives like those wind projects. There's a natural level of capital additions that have to happen every year. And as you make a big project, you know, it crowds out some of them, and then they come back. So that lower levels that you're seeing in 17 and 18 are sort of more normal.
The one challenge, and I would encourage you guys as a company to find better ways to communicate this, as we need to as well. But when you come forward with capital additions like wind projects and huge new portfolios and sell them as a savings to customers, and then you come in the next month and want a rate increase, that's confusing. That's confusing to policymakers. That's confusing to customers. Mm-hmm. And it's not a 30-second response, because that whole fuel clause, blah, blah, blah. So somehow in this whole discussion and decision, we have to be able to rectify how those savings play out, not in 30 years, in this year and next year and the next 5 years, because people just stop believing you. It's mm-hmm. like they don't believe it. I've had legislators say to my face, those aren't real. We spend 2 years looking at them. Yeah, well, our customers will never see them. And so that's just, you know, that is a very difficult message to deliver and to sort out.
It is, and one of the things that you've started to hear me talk about is the total bill and really showing our customers, here's what has happened to your total bill.
Yeah.
Now, granted, like, some of that is hard to extrapolate, because if somebody says, well, I use less energy, you know, from year to year to year, how much of that drove that versus that? But we are looking for ways so that, be it to give to you or to for ourselves to talk about, whatever it is, so that our customers can sit there and say, got it, I see that I'm getting some value out of this.
Right. Or when you say we need, you know, whatever the numbers were, $2.5 billion, and of that $1.8 billion, or I don't remember what your numbers were, Zev, but is wind, and that's the justification for needing these revenues, that alone is not enough. Like, that is right. not the story and is going to be helpful to communicate to customers.
And I think that's why Dave was bringing back it's not the only reason. You know, the revenue lines are going down. The O&M piece looks like it's relatively flat, but just a small little move in the O&M expense causes the need for a lot of revenue. And we are a big company, so at the end of the day, your point is well taken, and you've actually mentioned that to me now for about a couple years. And trust me, we've been looking at different messages that we can take to our customers to say, does this make sense? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And likewise, what feels honest? Because right. if you're saying something and you're like, hey, total bill is doing this, and it's not very honest, that hurts your credibility as well. And so believe it or not, the message was received, and we're trying to find the right way to communicate that and take a very complicated set of criteria and data points and distill it down into a 5 or 10 second talking point, which has to resonate with folks, and it has to be transparent. And so we've tried a few things. Some things have stuck. Some things haven't. Some things don't get through our own internal process because we don't like it. It feels disingenuous. And so, point well taken. But, you know, it's something that we're working on, too.
Commissioner, I would just say we did have some fairly robust...
Better Mark. Come up and state your name, Mark. And
Mark Nesbitt, North Dakota Principal Manager, involved with communications, legislative issues. And we did have fairly robust meetings with legislators in all three of our communities and talked about their strategies and the long-term view of it. So, and we would be happy to, and in fact, we'll continue those efforts to make sure involvement with the Chamber of Commerce at the political action groups. And so we will continue to work on that. And as Akash said, point well taken, and something that we can, I believe we can get better at it, but we're starting down that road.
Well, and even, I appreciate that, Mark. Thank you, and you too, Akash. To the point of explaining the difference between what's collected in base rates and then how that works on a bill. Like this, we have to pay for these through the base rates. That's what this revenue increase is for. The customers get the reductions on their fuel clause, and the net is the savings. Mm-hmm. And I've had a fair amount of success with that, and I think some nodding heads, which I take as encouraging sign. But again, it's just you can't do it enough.
Yeah, makes me wonder. Some of it comes from legislators that haven't been in our jurisdictions either, or
right.
that are extrapolating across different utilities, or maybe even the co-op. So that might be something we need to take a better look at when the policymakers come from across the whole state. So,
Thanks, Mark.
No, I kind of appreciate those comments and. I wouldn't say I wrestle with it, but it is. It's tough to explain. But it doesn't mean we don't do the right thing because it falls in the too hard to explain pile.
Right.
Even though we'll get beat up at times. Make no mistake, we'll get beat up. Let's see. Well, I will. Well, Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I can't think of anything I would need for the formal hearing. This was very helpful. So I think I've probably been the loudest person opposed to the settlement. And I'm definitely warming up to it. So let me just think about this, look at these charts a little bit. I have a few questions I just want to talk through with staff. But and then it, obviously, depending on how we all come out, we can maybe have it on discussion next week at the meeting, but we can make a determination of whether that hearing is needed soon.
Okay, well, in fairness, I'll weigh in. So you've got the missing cog, third leg in the stool, however you want to put it. I've been hopeful for a settlement, and I base a lot of it on the analysis staff has done on this. They've, you know, to echo some earlier comments, I know how much time they've spent on this. And, you know, I think we've thoroughly vetted the issue. And, you know, to be perfectly honest and candid, I think I would have a hard time explaining after the fact, and this isn't the impetus to do it, it's not a reason to do it, but what if we went to rate case and it wasn't as good as the settlement, which the numbers strongly suggest? They're very compelling in that sense, but a few new things that were presented, so I always like to go through the entire process. Due diligence is important. But, no, I don't believe I can see a need for the formal. I think This looks pretty good, but I just want to button a few things down.
Thank you. Appreciate the feedback. That's very helpful for us.
I know staff appreciates this opportunity to speak with you as well, commissioners. The company and staff, we both swim in the data and the information and the disagreements with things, and so I know not all of this stuff is necessarily privy to what we've all been looking at. So there is anything else that we would be helpful or anything we need to justify, we'd be more than happy to provide that to you. And just from more of a procedural aspect from advocacy staff, if this does need to go forward to a formal hearing, which certainly is fine with staff as well, whatever the commission chooses, we are in a unique position because a formal hearing usually requires a disagreement. So in rate cases, you are able to direct us of where you generally want us to go into and look into maybe some direction as well when you all have that discussion in a work session, telling us where you would like us to look or go, or a position that you'd be interested in hearing from advocacy staff would be helpful as well. That would at least, I think, make it for a more beneficial formal hearing if that's the route the commission would prefer to go.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, any other questions that you have? Anything else from the company or advocacy or advisory? Okay. The handouts material as well as the audio recording of today's proceeding is now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached?
None, Commissioner.
None. Thank you.
Is there anything else to add from either the company or advocacy?
Nothing.
Or advisory?
Nothing from the company.
Okay, then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record? Okay, seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.
Thank you.